From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Eben Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1971, the last time the voting age was lowered in the United States. Prior to 1971, the voting age was 21, but young adults were being drafted and sent to Vietnam. They organized and advocated and said that if they were being asked to serve their country in uniform, they ought to be able to vote, and it was a winning argument. Nearly 50 years later, there's a growing call to change the voting age once again, this time to age 16. This week, NPR profiled 19-year-old activist Tyler Okeke, who has taken his campaign to members of Congress. He told NPR, quote, "When we look down the road, we don't see a hopeful future. We don't see a future where we'll have access to clean water and clean air and equitable schools. Voting is just the logical next step in making sure that a generation that is so passionate about change and is so deeply affected by the decisions that are being made now, that we are inserted into policymaking and have a say in our democracy," end quote. Critics have some serious concerns with the idea of lowering the voting age to 16. They point out that the youngest eligible voters now aren't voting very much to begin with. Americans are 18, 19, 20, 21. They vote in sadly small numbers. The critics say that Okeke ought to focus on convincing young eligible voters to actually turn out on Election Day. Republicans view this effort as a way to make the electorate more progressive because teenagers tend to skew more politically to the left. Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley has taken up the cause in Washington, but her proposal to change the voting age to 16 failed last year. So what do you think? Keep the voting age at 18? Change it? Our guests will discuss it. Paul Hippolyte is a public affairs strategist back with us now. Paul, welcome back to the program.
Hello, good afternoon, Evan.
Hello to Gary Putup, who's a veteran campaign consultant and manager who has run for office himself. Gary, welcome. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks for joining me beyond today.
And we've got a junior at Greece Arcadia High School, Allison, and I'm going to take a shot at this. I think it's Bourgeois. How do you pronounce your last name?
I pronounce it Bourgeois.
I'm looking at the whole list of all the things I needed to do today, and the most unprofessional thing I didn't do was check. Bourgeois, Allison, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Mr. Dawson.
Mr. Dawson's my dad, but it's great to have you.
Sorry.
Call me Evan. Allison, by the way, we're going to have a lot to talk about with you, and I understand you're not going to represent all 16-year-olds. We're not going to put that pressure on you, but I am glad to have you and your perspective. Paul, you're the reason I really kind of turned my attention to this. I saw NPR's report, but you have been writing a little bit about how you think that this is on the money, that you think this change has to happen, Paul?
I do. I think I'm going to start from a dark place for all of us, unfortunately, which is watching and seeing the nonsense that happened last night in terms of the presidential debate. And I guess it was so depressing in part because I remember being in high school. And I remember thinking about the first time I would vote. I get it. I'm not like every other. I was probably an abnormal student, but I remember the first election I was involved in and really volunteering even in the primaries back in 2007 and how inspired I was to be a part of this country and to feel like an adult and to make my voice heard. And I think that level of that idealism and that urge to do good and to want to see better and to fix the country. I think that urge is so strong, and especially in younger folks that are not so cynical about the entire process. And I think even before I get to all the many reasons why I think it could happen and how we can get there, I think more than anything right now, I think we need them. We need idealism. We need people that are not just beaten down by the system. The youth is our future, and we desperately need them to save us.
Allison, at 16 years old yourself, would you like a chance to vote in this election?
Oh, well, I don't know about this one. But yeah, I definitely would. I have to agree with you on like the idealism perspective. I was having like a conversation with my dad, and I was talking about like lobbying and stuff and how everything's controlled by it. And I was like, why don't we just ban lobbying? And he's like, that's ridiculous, Allison. But you know, you have that sort of just want to say, this is obviously wrong. Why don't we just change it? And I think that is a fresh perspective. to add to the voting age. And you talk, and, you know, I feel like younger people with social media and stuff, we have more conversations and we introduce our parents to new perspective and our parents introduce us to new perspective and to thinking objectively. And I think, there are some statistics that say, you know, a lot of younger people, they're very involved and, you know, they can get their parents more involved as well. And I think it is, I think it's important to have some sort of positive outlook in on our elections, especially this year.
Okay. Well, and look, Allison may not realize it, but she's previewing a future conversation on this program, the very idea of ethical lobbying. We're going to get back to that in the future, but it's I do think it's interesting, Paul, to hear a 16-year-old, you know, talk about lobbying in a way that says, you know, it's part of a system that looks out of touch or corrupt or only serving one particular segment of the population.
Yes, I agree. And I think, in doing research for this show, I even looked at some of the people who we credit with founding this country. The average age is about 40. If you think about it, Thomas Jefferson was 33. Alexander Hamilton was in his 20s. Wasn't Joan of Arc, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't she 14 or 16?
I think 14.
Yeah, she was young.
Yeah, so we have a long history of younger folks coming into the system and seeing how it has always been done and deciding it can be done differently. And yet sometimes you need that, not sometimes, we need that outside fresh perspective from folks who see the way things are done and say and imagine a better world. And I think that right now, especially with all the institutions around us that seem like they're crumbling, I think we desperately need new outside voices to come in and say, how can we reimagine these systems?
Gary Putup, how do you see the question of changing that voting age from 18 to 16?
Well, I think to start, I would say this. I don't think that looking at a 13-year-old with visions of supernatural beings that engage in religious wars would necessarily be the role model that I would be picking for lowering the voting age. I will say this. I disagree with the critics that say, well, since 18 to 21-year-olds tend not to vote, that we shouldn't lower it to 16. I don't think that that's a good argument. And I don't know that it may even be a moot or irrelevant point. You know, doing a little research on this, there's only a handful of countries that allow 16-year-olds to vote. And they include places like Ecuador and Brazil and some other South Africa. But the one country that does is Austria. That probably is closest to us culturally and politically would be Austria. Austria, about 12 years ago, started allowing 16-year-olds to vote. And in fact, it is correct. The 16 to 18-year-olds tended to vote. They tended to vote left. And then between 18 and 21, their participation dropped off. But that's not really the point. I think where the confusion is here is the difference between participation and the ability to make decisions. There's plenty of evidence. We talked yesterday or quickly texted at the U of R, the Del Monte Center, right here in Rochester, has done research on the adolescent brain. And one need only Google neuroscience, brain development. And what we find is this, that the last part of the brain to develop is the frontal cortex. And why is that important in this conversation? Because the frontal cortex is that portion of the brain that allows us to make decisions based on long-term consequences and, of all things, empathy. And I think And that doesn't happen until people are reached in their early to mid-20s. I think if we want an example of someone that can't think long-term and has no empathy, all we had to do is watch the debates last night. I'm totally in favor of young people participating in government. I think you know my history. I was very involved with equal marriage and some gun control issues, in which I helped bring young people to Albany to lobby. And that's the way we get things done. I'm not clear, maybe that's another discussion on what the problem with lobbying is. Lobbying as a citizen participating going to their representative and saying, here, I'm going to lay out an argument to you as to why you should support or not support a particular point of view. I don't know why you would want to end that.
So if I can jump in, Evan. I think, first of all, I want to get to eventually, I don't want to monopolize the time here, but I want to get to eventually how this can be done, which I think would get to some of the concerns that Gary had. But before I get there, when we talk about long-term planning, thinking, and empathy, it's funny that those were, maybe not funny, but it's interesting that those are the points that Gary raised, because that's actually where I go to, which is think about what are the long-term ills we have in this country? What are some of the things that we need to solve that really require long-term planning and thinking? Think about the deficit. Think about Social Security. How about climate change? All of those issues are issues that, in my opinion, some of the folks that make the worst decisions are the people that are probably the oldest in our societies that are getting ready to exit the system. Who better to decide and to really be invested in long-term planning and thinking around issues like climate change than the people who are going to have to deal with it?
So, I want to push Paul on this point here, because Paul is making a blunt point that I think is, first of all, it's just true what Paul is saying. Climate change is something that the younger you are, the more time you will have to deal with the negative consequences. I mean, that's just reality. But with that logic, Paul, why not have a 12-year-old vote then? I mean, 12-year-olds will have longer to deal with than the 16-year-olds or 8-year-olds. Why do you draw the line at 16?
So there's a great Democratic theorist. Her name is slipping my mind. She was on, sorry to name it a different podcast, but on Ezra Klein's podcast about a year ago. And she talked about all the different ways we can expand democracy and voting. And so I guess what I would say first is that I think there's a lot more exploration. There's a lot more trial and error. We should be doing so much more around experimenting. That's what I was looking for, sorry, as to ways to expand democracy. Because if you actually believe that your government is no longer, that they don't gain the legitimacy through the divine right of kings, but through the consent of the governed, well, we should think about all the ways that that makes sense, and all the ways that we are not being we're spreading democracy. I think it's one of the greatest ideas we've had in the last couple hundred years. And for some reason, in this country, a lot of people think that we stopped inventing things or we stopped coming up with great ideas in 1776. I don't understand where we get that. So my pushback would be, let's look at there are a lot of things we could look at and experiment as to how to expand democracy. So I'm not going to shut down that idea. I'm going to say that this is an incremental change we're talking about making, and back to how this could happen. My thing was my experiment will be not a congressional law or not a federal law, but a statewide and local laws that maybe take the age from 18 to 17 and a half to 17. You combine that with civics education. You combine that with research that kids have the time to do in school. You have a lot of time that we can help kids get there or help young adults get there. And so it wouldn't happen overnight in my thinking of how to structure this. But in terms of should younger folks, even younger than 16, get a chance to vote, that's something we should look at exploring. Should there are some theorists that have talked about even weighting the vote of younger folks more than the folks that are older. I mean, we could experiment with this, but democracy didn't stop at 1776. All the great ideas, what was this one? 1971. All the great ideas didn't stop then. So I don't understand why we can't keep experimenting and coming up with better ideas to reimagine a better world.
I think you're thinking of Astra Taylor. Astra Taylor was a guest on the Ezra Klein podcast, talking about all the different kind of creative ways to expand democracy,
including democracy for rivers and why don't rivers
and animals
and the air and animals. Yes. So, but I don't want to get
Yeah, but that's one to throw on your podcast along with Connections for your next workout.
Yes.
We're talking about lowering the voting age, which is a proposal that has at least gained some currency in both Washington and in activist circles, the idea of lowering the voting age from 18 to 16. Paul Hippolyte's a public affairs strategist. Gary Putup, a veteran campaign consultant and manager. Allison Burgoyes is a junior at Greece Arcadia High School. Allison, before I take a few phone calls on this subject, how do you feel about the idea of sort of brain development and whether at 16 you'd have enough development and responsibility to take on voting, Allison?
Thank you. I don't know if you've ever, we've all been to a high school. Sometimes you can't tell the difference between the 16 and 18-year-olds. But, you talk about the line at 16. You're being introduced to a lot of subjects in school, and you're being introduced to the very information that you need to act upon. And you're at a close enough age where you are looking at that 18 range when you gain a bunch of rights and you become, a full citizen. And so that's kind of what you're looking for ahead. That's kind of why it's at 16. It's close enough, but it's still far away. You also talk about, I am affected by certain laws at my age. I have a part-time job. There's taxes taken out of that. There's kids who are tried as adults in court, and you have kids who are more active in politics than their grandparents, and they know more. And it's just, I feel like it is, based on my personal experience and based on my experience in social media, and that's sort of it's sort of an extension of the social contract where it's more of a push to include empathy. You know what I mean? We often think of high school and stuff as an exclusion of empathy, but nowadays there's just this push to include everybody, and it's a very social thing that it's not acceptable. You're not really accepted if you aren't doing that. And so I think, I don't know. I feel like it would be an interesting thing to explore.
Well, and on the subject of brain development, Jonathan in Rochester wants to jump in on that. I'll read what the University of Rochester wrote in summary of their work on this, and then I'll take John's phone call. On understanding the teen brain, this from research at the U of R, quote, "It doesn't matter how smart teens are or how well they scored on the SAT or ACT, good judgment isn't something they can excel in, at least not yet. The rational part of a teen's brain isn't fully developed and won't be until age 25 or so. In fact, recent research has found that adult and teen brains work differently. Adults think with the prefrontal cortex, the brain's rational part. This is the part of the brain that responds to situations with good judgment and an awareness of long-term consequences. Teens process information with the amygdala. This is the emotional part," end quote. Gary, does that mean you want voting to start at 25?
No, but I even question the ability to make those good decisions between 18 and 21. And I'm going to just take a step back for a second. This new modern revisionist history that we seem to be enveloped in now, that somehow that anybody over a certain age just is somehow unconcerned with the climate and the world we're leaving our children and grandchildren is just rubbish. I'm going to remind our young guests that look at the EPA, the Civil Rights Act, and many, many issues that advanced our social welfare fare here in the United States were done by us boomers. And we haven't forgotten that. I want to flip that coin a little bit too. Let's take a look at a lot of the people showing up at the Trump rallies that are supporting Trump and are involved with the alt-right. You don't see a lot of old senior citizens there. So I'm going to suggest that before we get into the ageism and the assumption that older people can't understand or empathize or comprehend the consequences of what's going on with the climate, for their children and grandchildren, it needs to really be discarded. And actually, this is the one of the most important things when we bring this up, is that we talk about climate change and climate science, and I'm not going to, I don't want to go there, but we always hear from those, and perhaps farthest on the left, always saying, well, the right denies the science. But why is the left denying the science on this? And if I can make one last point, and then I'll let go, is, again, I will go with the confusion between involvement, participation, and decision-making. Now, I know you're a dad. I'm a father and grandfather. I'm going to assume Allison is not a mother. I don't know about Paul's situation, but I'm sure there's many parents here that involve and get the perspective of their teenagers and children in decision making. And it's important to listen to those perspectives, but it's also important to understand that they're not in a position physically to make the decision. So just because we're telling you no voting doesn't mean you can't participate. Look how much progress we made on gun control from young people, because they did lead the way a lot on that. But that doesn't mean they should be allowed to, I mean, vote. Just one last thing. I mean, we understand. Should we then drop the drinking age to 16? And we would immediately recognize that's a bad idea. It's a bad idea because we know 16-year-olds can't make those kind of decisions. So why do we think a 16-year-old can't decide whether they should be drinking or not and driving, but yet they should be deciding the fate of history?
Yeah, there's a lot there. And on that last point, I actually would like to – I mean, I know drinking at 16 in Europe is pretty common. I have no idea if alcoholism or alcohol abuse is higher or lower in Europe than it is here, where the drinking ages are different. But let me set that aside. And before I go to the phones, I'll just kick over to Paul. You know, when Gary says, hey – you know, you talked about climate change. You know, stop talking about older Americans like we don't care, or that we're not capable of having that empathy, or that we're not capable of doing the work. We've done the work in these movements before. We can be part of that. You shouldn't just discard that. What do you say to that, Paul?
I agree. We shouldn't discard anyone. And I hope to one day be a senior citizen. And I respect my elders and all that they've gone through. But the truth is that I'm looking at a CBS poll from 2019, and among all Americans who think climate change is a serious problem, 18 to 29, 70%, 30 to 44, 67%, 45 to 64, 61%, 65 plus, 58%. So I'm not making an unsubstantiated claim. I'm just actually talking about the facts here. The facts are that the older you are right now as an American, the less you think climate change is a serious problem. That's not an opinion. That's just the fact. And this is not just one poll. I can give you plenty of polls on that. And when it comes to brain development, I think that's where we're getting into a tricky place here. That's why I went back to if we agree on democracy being something that we all get it's something we because of the consent of the governed, we have the right to be a part of this system and the right to democracy. I think there's a ways that you can experiment with this idea. And maybe there is a way that younger folks, for example, could maybe their parents are voting for them until they get to a certain age, until that person says, no, I'm old enough and I do want to vote on my own. And then they can do that at 12, 13, 14. Again, this is just an idea, an experiment I'm throwing out there. But there's so many ways to do this. But I think every time we get into this argument to restricting the voting, to restricting who can vote, we get into really scary territory when we talk about brain development or the capacity to understand or to make long-term decisions. These are the exact same arguments that were used as to why women couldn't vote, as to why Black people couldn't vote, literally the exact same arguments. And if you want to talk about ableism, then and diminished capacity, well, again, I'm not picking on seniors, but we all know that at a certain age, some folks are not as sharp anymore. Some folks develop, unfortunately, mental health issues. They whether it's dementia, you have Alzheimer's, you have, and these are terrible illnesses that I'm not making light of. I'm just being honest that if we're talking about ableism and when someone is old enough to vote, well then do we go the other end too and talk and start talking about, I mean, I've worked in politics for years. There are people that go to the polls that receive help being able to vote. Or what happened? Do you have to have a certain IQ now? What happens if someone has on the spectrum of Down syndrome or whatever? Like, I think we all have these rights and we all should be a part of the system. And I'm actually pushing back against that argument of mental capacity, because I think that's a dangerous road to go down. And I'll give you one last example. There have been numerous reports that have come out that former President Ronald Reagan, in his last few years, was not fully here. And that's a scary thing. But I can get into a long conversation about a country being ran by folks that are mostly elderly. There's a lot of studies going on around that and the problems that come about because of that. But I guess my last point is that these arguments that I hear being made, I think take us down a really dangerous road. And I think we should think really, really carefully before we make those arguments.
Gary, do you take that point or no?
No, no. Evan, I'm right down the middle. I worry as much about the extreme ideas on the right as I do as extreme ideas on the left. That, you know, that every time that we talk about something, that all of a sudden we get into, you know, dystopian societies where you simply say something like, look at this child is just not physically developed enough to do this, that somehow, you know, we're getting into violating everybody's right to vote is again, it's just, I don't know other word but rubbish. I mean, we wouldn't expect a 6-year-old to be able to run high hurdles. Why? Because we recognize immediately they just don't have the physical capability.
We also wouldn't expect that from a 95-year-old either, right?
Agreed. Yeah. But we're talking
That's
about
my
decision.
Point.
But Paul, we're talking about the ability to make decisions, and we want to talk science here. There's no way to get around this. The brain just isn't done growing. It just isn't developed. This isn't anything against young people. And I want to be clear, all right? I want to be clear that I'm not in favor of people with dementia and Alzheimer's voting either. But, you know, I want to be clear. There's a difference between participating in government, having your say, and being able to make those decisions based, you know, on some reason. You know, I go back to your very first statements you and Allison made. Like, we need idealism. You know, idealism is nice until it runs into reason. It's great to be idealistic, but at some point you have to realize that we have to have reason here too. And that and reason is the answer, not idealism. Again, I want to be very clear. Allison, you write to your congressman, lobby, protest, write letters to the editors, talk to your friends, educate yourself. But really what we're saying, and when Allison talked about education, she's being trained. She's being trained to be a good citizen. You know, we wouldn't expect if we were to go into a surgery and if the surgeon just showed up and says, well, I'm in training and I'm going to do your heart surgery, we would immediately rush out of that hospital. Really, do your due diligence.
Right,
educate yourself.
Let me ask Allison. Allison, Gary's making the point that you can be engaged in politics without voting. There's a lot of ways to do it. He points to the gun laws and the recent movement on gun control as an example. Do you take that point, or do you think voting is really the kind of the key to the realm there?
I mean, voting is the key. You can still participate, but unless you're making active decisions, to a certain extent, you're very limited on what you can do. You're not the end decision. So you can influence others, but you can't make the decision yourself.
Okay. Well,
can I just add one quick thing?
Do it quick. Do it quick.
And I will be. You know, of all of these things, and from my experience, voting is like almost the easy way out. I go in one day, I fill out a form, or I go and vote. But you know what the hard work of getting your way is politically is lobbying and doing it you know, and being in there for the long haul. That's it.
Can I just push back?
Do it briefly, Paul, and then we got to really get to phone calls. Yeah.
I think the late John Lewis would have a lot of disagreements with that. I think he's one of his most famous quotes is, it's the most important right you have in a democracy. In a democracy where you believe that the government has legitimacy through the consent of the governed, your vote is the most important thing you have. I'll end there.
All right, I've got to get our only break of the hour as we talk about and debate the idea of moving the voting age from 18 to 16. If you're on the phone, we're coming to you next. This is our only break of the hour. Coming up in our second hour, we talk to the experts about the state of the coronavirus in our community. New York City has seen a spike in cases. The governor says it's a cluster of cases and it has to get controlled soon. It cannot be allowed to become a new outbreak. It could spread to other parts of the state. That's not inevitable, but we'll talk to the experts about what they're seeing, what they're concerned about, and their thoughts on moving into the colder months next hour. We're talking about the voting age and the proposal to change it from 18 to 16 with Allison Burgoyes, a junior at Greece Arcadia High School, Gary Putup, a veteran campaign consultant and manager, Paul Hippolyte, a public affairs strategist. I'm going to read a few emails and then we'll go right to your phone calls. Jim says, I'm 64 years old. I think voting, and in effect impacting my life, requires a certain level of knowledge and maturity. So whether 16, 18, 21, or other, it should be at the high range of all the other ages of rights of responsibility. So whatever number it should also be the same for tobacco, alcohol, pistol permits, contracts, or being allowed coverage under a parent's health insurance. That comes from Jim. Rick says, Evan, as I consider the fact that adults over the age of 17 are the ones who voted in the current administration, which is as short-sighted an administration as I have seen in my lifetime, I am not as concerned about the developmental lag in brain development cited by your guests. We definitely need to think about maturity and reasoning, but let's not get too hung up on age per se, because supposed adults don't consistently show good judgment. Andrew says, we need more people to participate in deciding how we are governed. Perhaps if we had better voter participation of the current voting age population, we would have a clearer picture of what we as citizens want. That could eventually lead to a plebiscite on adding people, young folks, nonviolent convicts and others to our voter rolls. The decision should be made by voters and not by a select few politicians. Jonathan in Rochester, been waiting. Go ahead, John.
Hi. I do see, of course, that young people, you know, may not have the acumen and all of this that, you know, older people have. But I think it's really dangerous. I mean, I agree with you. I graduated from U of R. I was in the neuroscience department. So, I understand this stuff from that level. But a lot of science is done without context. You know, these are, you know, can they make this decision, that decision? I mean, what the student said, and I'm sorry, it kind of came in before everybody's introduced, what the student said was right. I mean, young people have to pay taxes. We it's simplistic, but we presumably fought a war because people were being taxed and not represented. So I think a lot of that goes along with it. But I think the bigger thing is that if you just go along Facebook and read any comment, whether it's on the left or right, there are grown people that believe in the craziest things you can imagine, and they vote based on that. I mean, I know you can't restrict that, but you have to think about, like, there are people that make decisions on voting for people, and a lot of it is a complete fantasy. So I would rather they not vote. So, that's my comment. I'll listen.
All right, Jonathan, thank you. Allison, can I ask you to respond first? Go ahead.
We are paying taxes into some degree, and we are very much affected by a lot of political decisions, whether it's now or in a couple of years. And so to not have that end decision-making process, it is kind of seen as unjust in some people's eyes. And I think that is definitely a valid perspective there. I also think to piggyback on a point made with, like, a lot of young people are involved in a lot of extremist groups. A lot of American politics isn't extreme. You know, we're very moderate. We don't think that we're moderate, but we are. In the grand scheme of things, when you look at the entirety of the political spectrum, we are not that far right and left. the majority of people are not. So you're talking about a very small minority when you're talking about extremists. And I that's kind of my point.
Does that quell the concerns of the proud centrist on the panel, Gary Puttup?
No, I agree 100% with Allison. And look, at the extremes are that. And that's why we call them extremes. And again, the radical right, the radical left. But unfortunately, you know, they're the squeaky wheels that get the oil. In regards to Jonathan, the caller, I mean, I think, and you know my feelings on this, Evan, we could have a long 2-hour debate on whether democracy, direct democracy, is such a good idea. I mean, that's an assumption that we really need to look at. I mean, as far back as Aristotle listed democracy as one of the worst forms of government, and because it leads creates a vacuum that leads to anarchy and then tyranny. If I could just address one thing that Paul said, and he uses statistics and he uses his survey on whether, you know, in regards to age correlating to how serious people took or take climate change. So here's one advantage of having lived a long life is that, you know, in my time, you know, we lived with the Malthus, who told us there's no way you're going to be able to feed, you know, 3 billion people on Earth. And yet we have plenty of food. It's just a distribution problem. We grew up where we would have drills at our school. We didn't have active shooter drills, but we had nuclear war drills where we would tuck under our desk before a nuclear attack. In 1968, you know, we had Paul Ehrlich write The Population Bomb, who warned that by 1970 there would be perils of overpopulation, as he said, mass starvation, such structural or social upheaval, and a complete breakdown of society. So I would just advise people that think that, oh, well, old people don't take it seriously. It's not that we don't take it seriously. It's, you got to understand, we've faced a lot of challenges. This is a challenge. This is an opportunity. And maybe we just don't seem to be running around with our hair on fire because we've been through this before.
All right, let's let Paul respond to that. Go ahead, Paul.
The first part would be, in addition to not taking it seriously, there are a number of older folks who don't believe it exists. So that's, again, that's the data and that's the numbers on that. So it's not just about not taking it seriously, although that's part of the problem. And I'll say that I listen to the stories. I have plenty of older folks in my family. I appreciate them. I respect them. But I'm just saying, in terms of balance, I get it, the need for wisdom in the system and the need for people that have been there before. But I think part of that balance is you need people that have not been there before and that can think and see things completely differently. It kind of works in, if you look at the studies, actually in most industries, the folks that get in and then create a lot of change, usually they're about a couple of years into that profession. Because once you're 10, 20, 50 years in, you're ready to retire. You've just seen so much and you're just like, this is how things work. And it will work this way because it's the only way to work. And sometimes you need fresh thinking, new ideas to come in. And back to the point that I believe Jonathan, the caller, made, which was about be careful with the science. And so just piggybacking off the caller, the science supposedly says that our brains aren't fully developed until, what, 25, 26? So if you're following the science, then that's what you go with. But if you're not following, is there any science that says at 18 you can't decide who can be on your school board or who can be a county legislator? What science says that? So these are just things we're throwing out to back up our claims, but there is no science behind that. And the truth is that I see a lot of good, and I won't stay on this, but back to what I was saying earlier, like maybe it doesn't go with 16 this year. Maybe you, in 2 years, you do a study and you go to 17 and a half. Can we agree that could be a good idea? If it's 17 and a half, or let's say it's 17, well, then what if the concerns are that they're not mature enough or they don't know enough or they don't have enough knowledge of the world? Well, then let's give them that. Well, then think about let's do this thought experiment. If it's 17 in 2 years, what needs to be done now to have the systems in place so that a young adult at 17 knows how to vote, and then maybe in 5 years we go down to 16. If that's the case, well, then what needs to be in our schools? What kind of civics education needs to be there? What kind of conversations you need to be having with your young adult, young adults still in the home? How do we make voting compulsory? How do you make it easier? So you're talking about an entire a structural change that will make it easier to vote for them, that will allow them the knowledge and the wisdom or the whatever they need, the knowledge to vote at that time. And then think about the long-term effects of having folks at 16, 17 being prepared and ready to vote. I think that's incredible good.
Evan, if I just real quick, you better do it faster. We got a lot of people waiting on the phone, Paul, my friend.
Yeah, Paul and I are not in disagreement here. I am absolutely 100% agree with Paul. We need to educate our people. We need to teach them how to vote. We need to teach them what's important. The only place when we're in a disagreement here is at what stage in their life are they physically able to do that? Done.
Okay. To the phones, and let's take a small pile of calls in a row here. Matt in Canandaigua. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Love this topic, by the way. I haven't heard a lot of people talk about it, but I think if we move the voting age to 16, you're going to see actually young people that, you know, one of the guests you had on said, young people don't vote right now, you know, the 18 to 21-year-olds. Well, if they're in high school and, you know, they know they can vote during an election, that, guess what? Kids are going to be talking about it. And when they're talking about it, they're going to create ideas and form opinions. And it potentially could result in younger people ending up voting over the long term because it's introduced to them at such a young age. Second, we're talking about voting. We're not talking about being president of the United States. So about the maturity level, we're talking about voting. It is important, but a 16-year-old knows right and wrong. A 16-year-old gets it enough to be able to vote. And thirdly, I just think it should be their right. If a 16-year-old can be emancipated, can drive a car, and pays taxes, they definitely should be able to vote. Thank you for taking my call.
Matt, thank you. And so Matt is saying if you extend the voting age to 16, you're going to only engender more conversation among that age set, more studying of the issues, better information. Well, Allison, let me read an email from a listener named Sam who says, Evan, you've brought on a one percenter of 16-year-olds. He's talking about you, Allison. He's very impressed with you. No surprise.
Oh, thank you.
No surprise. You're a very impressive person. But Sam says, Evan, you've brought on a one percenter of 16-year-olds while the rest are out overdosing on Benadryl or eating Tide Pods. No way should 16-year-olds be able to vote. You want to respond to Sam there, Allison?
I don't think I know anybody who's taking Benadryl for fun. I have to say, though, recently with all of the political unrest that has been going on, I see more and more kids my age. Previously, it might have just been me and like a few other people, but I've seen more and more kids my age start to research and really look into things and dig into things. And they're not always right, but we have conversations and we have disagreements. And like, I get in a lot of disagreements, and that's very beneficial. And I mean, to further my point, we have more time. You know, I can scroll on Twitter for 2 hours and look into whatever Twitter fights I want. I can do critical research for however long I want. I have almost all the time in the world to do these things that a lot of adults just can't. So you're constantly, it's a process that more and more kids are getting involved in. Maybe it's just the time. Maybe it's just with COVID and, you know, Black Lives Matter and everything. But I've seen a definite increase.
Okay. Gary, I just briefly, can you respond to Sam? Do you agree with Sam, who agrees with you, but he says it's because most 16-year-olds are out eating Tide Pods?
No. I agree with Allison. I don't see that. And I'll tell you, Evan, in my work at the NYCLU and in gun control, I work with a lot of 16-year-olds. No, I'm not going to put down 16-year-olds. They are bright.
They're smart. They're active. I'll tell you what, I think 16-year-olds today are much more and better informed than 16-year-olds were in my day. And we were going through Vietnam. It just boils down to, can they make the long, can they understand the long-term consequences?
Okay, interesting. Let me get Robert in Fairport. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Hey, we spent like the last year or two talking about raise the age in New York State, and this was all because the belief that kids that are 16 and 17-year-olds should not be treated as adults because they don't have the age. They're not old enough to make a judgment on essentially the law is saying that they lack the maturity to make the right decisions at that age, and they don't want to be – they should not be punished as adults at age 16 and 17, if that's the case. And, you know, this effort is going in completely the opposite direction. And there's a couple other things that should be considered here. Number one, a lot of kids today don't have summer jobs. Back coming out of World War II, about almost 60% of kids had summer jobs. Today it's down to about 35%. People are living on their own much later than they did in years past, too. So younger generations are much less likely to engage in adult activities such as, you know, raising a family. The age when people are getting married has risen over the years, as well as holding a job. And these are all important things that really should be considered when somebody's voting. How is your vote going to affect employment? How is it going to affect the economy? Things like that.
All right, Robert,
Can I jump in here, actually?
Yeah, go ahead, Allison, sure.
Yeah, a lot of the statistics about, you know, kids getting less summer jobs, less kids getting summer jobs, part of that has to do with a lot of places aren't going to hire people who aren't under 16. Like, I ran into this issue myself, and, you know, now we're in a global pandemic, so it's, you know, you can't really look at this year. It's just a lot of places don't want to hire young now. That's part of the issue. And a lot of kids don't have parents who can drive them. So if they don't live near places, that's also an issue that didn't exist as much in earlier generations. And I have to say, the fact that kids are getting, or people are getting married older now and moving out later, I think is more of a sign of maturity and you're making smarter decisions, as in, like, I'm not financially able to move out right now. I'm not ready to marry somebody. I feel like that's also maybe a cultural shift. Like, I don't think that necessarily has to do with voting per se. I think it's
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Paul Hippolyte, Robert says the same people who argue that 16-year-olds are plenty capable of maturely voting also argue that we need to raise the age of criminal responsibility to 18 because 16 and 17-year-olds are not mature enough to be held accountable for their decisions. Does Robert have a point there?
So as many people who are prison abolitionists, I think there are a lot of arguments that are made, and especially in terms of getting the public on board to pass things like raising the age when it comes to people who are incarcerated. So sometimes you make arguments in politics that that's not the end result or the end goal. The truth is that the law is being also disproportionately administered to people of color, and specifically to Black Americans who were in jail at 15, 16, 17 years old. And then, by the way, this has still happened all over the country outside of New York State. And so there are sometimes arguments are made in politics. It's not the end goal or the best argument to be made. So I'd say that's not only should we raise the age, but also we should raise it for a lot of reasons, and we should change how we administer how people are incarcerated. But also to piggyback to the summer jobs issue, I first had I was 15 and a half when I had my first job working at Quiznos in Springfield, Ohio. And then from there, once I turned 16, I was working at Quiznos and Steak and Shake, not just as a summer job. I worked throughout the school year also. I worked two jobs until my senior year when I got a job at Kroger where I worked, and I've been working my entire life. So I've been paying taxes since I've been 15 and a half years old. It was just a two and a half year delay before I could make those decisions as to where my tax dollars were going.
All right. Gary, put up some final thoughts from you as well.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, let's be consistent here. That was the exact argument, and I was in favor of raise the age in regards to that, because in my 30-year career in law enforcement, I saw a lot of 16, 17, 18-year-olds. They just didn't understand the long-term consequences of what they were doing. I think that's just consistent.
I want to give the final word to Allison Burgoyes, a junior at Greece Arcadia High School, 16 years old, thinking about voting. Obviously, it's not going to happen now when you're 16. But what do you want listeners to sort of take from this conversation, especially if they're on the fence about, you know, people your age voting, Allison?
I think it's definitely whether you believe that it's realistically possible. I think it is something to explore, and I think people should pay a little more attention to the younger kids in their, or not kids, but, you know, teenagers in their life, and what are their beliefs, and what are, you know, what are the drawbacks of that? Is it too much idealism and not enough reason? And paying attention to that, and just because this issue, I don't think it's going to magically go away. I think it's going to come up again. So I think we should just pay more attention to kids my age and what we're thinking.
Allison, I just want to thank you for making the time to come on and engaging and frankly bringing some really impressive points. And I'm really glad you joined us. Thanks for making the time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Allison Burgoyes is a junior at Greece Arcadia High School. Gary Putup, always nice talking to you, sir. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks, Evan. And I don't believe Allison is the 1%. She's very impressed.
Oh, I think what you're saying is there's a lot of 16-year-olds who are impressive, and Allison is one of the many, and I think that's a great point. Paul Hippolyte, public affairs strategist, thank you, sir.
Thank you, and thank you to all the Gen Zers out there making change. Keep it going.
All right, more connections coming up.